Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Janice Wolf.
And hello, hello, hello. Today is a beautiful sunny day, finally, in glorious New Jersey, which was starting to feel like Seattle. I have faith, though, and I'm sure we're going to have more rain later or tomorrow just because we've been having so much rain. Now, that brings up something that I think is really important. You know, a lot of people don't realize how important it is to keep an eye on your dog's bathroom habits, we'll say. Why is that important? Okay. When dogs go out and they might be licking something that has standing water in it, or something later on, a little bit later on in the year when the mosquito larvae starts hatching, we don't always think about what it takes to make sure that that the dogs don't have anything. They're not inhaling something. They're not eating something, ingesting something. So what happens is then we go and we look at our dogs and we say, gee, it's kind of weird. My dog is, well, what is he doing? He's acting a little funny. He's having a lot of accidents. He's peeing where he never did that. My dog never did that, but all of a sudden he's doing it. So let's talk about the hazards of what can happen to your dog in the weather where we have right now, springtime going into summer. All right, well, first of all, this year is going to be very wet. There's probably going to be a ton of mosquitoes and a ton of other, you know, kind of funky things out there that are going to try to hurt our dogs. So the best thing for you to do is make sure at this time of the year you get your dogs on, and especially in the South, a really good dewormer and a heartworm. So a lot of the heartworm pills, for instance, Interceptor, which is my choice, Interceptor actually protects against hookworms, roundworms, whipworms, and pinworms. Some of the others will only cover certain of the worms. So if you have your dog on a good, high quality, like an Interceptor or something like that, you'll find that you won't have to worry so much about your dog contracting worms or other parasites. Now, if you're in the Northeast, obviously, we have Lyme disease. Now, Lyme disease is a tough one because it can go unnoticed and basically just sit latent in the body for years even. And some dogs won't develop symptoms and some do. And we know those are from ticks. Ticks tend to be in wooded areas, drier areas, where other things like Giardia, there are things that they can contract outside, even by walking on your lawn. This is why if you get a puppy, you have to be so, so careful not to let the puppy walk around outside where there were other animals or other dogs, because your puppy, and again, this is going to go into immunizations a little bit, your puppy is not protected until about 2 weeks after your first shot. So if you get vaccinations for, let's say, a six-week-old puppy, it may not be protected till at least 8 weeks. Now, what is interesting about that is, and we talked about this last week, your puppy will naturally have some immunities from mama. So we don't want to vaccinate too early because then we're going to whack away at mama's immunities and antibodies that she gave to the puppies through the milk and the colostrum. So again, let's check with our veterinarians. If you don't love your veterinarian and your veterinarian doesn't spend time with you or doesn't answer your questions, then, you know, ask around, ask some friends and see if you can't find someone who, you know, is interested in helping you. Because most veterinarians are, when compared with doctors, sorry for those of you who are doctors or in the medical field, but most veterinarians go into it because we love animals, right? Well, plastic surgeons can love people, but let's face it, you go into plastic surgery, unless it's cosmetic dentistry, you're working with people who have, you know, been disfigured. Really, veterinarians are about the top of the class. And we all know veterinarians have a harder time getting into school than doctors. There are very few veterinarian schools. There are a couple new ones being opened, but there are fewer than 30 vet schools in the country. And each one takes maybe 100. So there's not that many that that are graduating every year. So ask, if you don't like your veterinarian, ask around. Get one who is somebody who you feel comfortable with, who's very knowledgeable, and isn't afraid to check in a book or on the computer with a veterinary journal to make sure that they're giving you the right advice. Okay, so let's go back to this wet environment that we're living in right now across most of the country. There are a lot of different things that happen, from mold spores all the way up to things like I said, like Giardia and other gastro issues. So if a dog is not feeling well, check, bring him to the vet. You don't have to run there the first moment that you think there's something wrong. But if you notice that your dog is having a little bit of an issue urinating, you say, well, you know, he's having accidents. He usually doesn't. And we're seeing higher rates than ever of urinary tract issues now, even in larger male dogs, which usually was smaller female dogs or larger female dogs because they squat down. Their privates are a little bit closer to the ground. Males usually lift their leg. But remember, if you have a male dog who squats down to urinate, it's also very possible that he can get a UTI. So UTI can be in any part of the urinary tract, and that's something that you definitely want to get your dog to the doctor. So a UTI can make them drink more, can change their behavior in many ways, can make them lethargic, can make them bloated. And there's also things like struvite crystals and other kind of stones, bladder and kidney stones. So your vet is probably going to be your best friend this spring, especially with all the wet weather. And boy, oh boy, I'm about done with the rain. I'm sure you guys are too. So let's go on to the next part of this. This is our From Shelter Dog to Service Dog segment. And we're going to talk about some of the wonderful things that are going on with rescues and shelters around the country and some of the emergency techniques that people are employing in trying to help dogs. Now, last year, in 2018, our foundation, Merlin's Kids, in a six-week period, rescued 25 dogs. We actually had 19 that we had rescued to become service dogs. We've been doing this longer than any other organization, 20-some-odd years of just with rescuing dogs from shelters and rescues. And you do have to be an expert behaviorist, not just a trainer. You really need to know what you're talking about, what you're doing, because there are some great obedience trainers out there. But a lot of training a service dog depends on finding the right match and understanding the disability. So it's not just you're going to go train a dog to sit and lie down and it's magically a service dog. You have to study and be an expert on the disability for which you're training the service dog. So think about it. If you can, you're a great obedience trainer and you can train the dog to sit and lie down and stay and high five and, you know, whatever else it is that you want to train the dog to do. But if that dog can be a great obedience trainer, but it needs to constantly be told what to do, it's not going to be a very good service dog. A service dog has to be automatic. A service dog should be a dog who's looking to help. Basically, a service dog is a dog who wants to be a parent, wants to be a mother or a father, and take care of someone else. So this is where we get into some issues with what exactly qualifies someone to train dogs to be service dogs. And it's not a local dog trainer or even a national dog trainer. You've got to know what you're doing and learn about the disability for which you are training that dog. And if you don't, you're not training service dog. So I am very involved right now in trying to get national standards set for this so that we don't have every Tom, Dick, and Harry deciding he's a service dog trainer because a year ago he was selling, he was a stockbroker, and now this year he decides he's a behaviorist and is claiming to have expertise he doesn't have. That is fraud. That is not something that anybody should be doing. You want someone who's got expertise, dogs that they're able to, you know, kind of work with and understand about, or at least, and I'd say bare minimum 10 or 20 service dogs then that's going to be a problem, because we have to make sure that somebody who's going to take your money and is going to claim to have expertise actually has that expertise. So what do we look for when we've got, let's say, a dog who, you know, you find in a shelter, you bring him home, he seems to have something with him, we don't know what it is, but he's not acting right. So we say, oh, he's not trained right. Okay. Well, let's always think about looking for a medical reason first. Very, very often, there is a very significant medical issue. So going back to what we started with, how about if the dog has urinary tract infection? It has some kind of a bloodborne illness, tick-borne illness. That can change behavior. And also remember, when a dog is in a shelter, particularly, and you take him out, his personality is going to change a lot. But there's a two-month period. I call it a honeymoon period. And in that two-month honeymoon period, that's the period of time where that dog is going to start turning into who he really is. Now, think about it. You go out on a date with someone. You say, wow, you know, I really like this person. It's really, you know, they're cute and, you know, very nice shape. And, you know, wow, really good person. And then you, of course, you dress up nicely. You don't say four-letter words. You are kind of being on your best behavior. And you're together for a couple of months. And now you start being who you are. And by about 6 months, we know if we want like it or lump it. We want to know if we either like you and you seem to be getting better, or we say, oh dear Lord, no. So that's the same thing as that happens with service dogs, or sorry, shelter dogs. So when you're trying to train a shelter dog to become a service dog, you can't just take a dog and in a month or two train it to sit and lie down and expect that it's going to be a service dog. Now, we're working on getting regulations also for dogs who are considered to be emotional support dogs. Now, I think the concept of emotional support dogs is great, because as a little friend of mine always says, you know, who doesn't feel better when they're near a dog? I mean, you know, the Mark Twain, right? The outside of a dog is good for the inside of a man. There's nothing better for the inside of a man, right, than the outside of a dog. So it's very true. But if you have a dog and you want to train it to become an emotional support dog, there are no skills or tasks that the dog needs to be trained for, but we are trying to actually bring in standards for emotional support dogs that they do need to be well behaved, because they are allowed in areas of airplanes for the Air Carrier Act, the ACA. They're also allowed in FHA. There are a lot of regulations. We've all heard about this. But the problem is, my problem is, just train your damn dog. Train your emotional support dog so it's well-behaved and it has public access. And I don't care what it does. I don't care if the dog does no skill for you and you just feel great having your dog. Because guess what? We all love our dogs. They're all our emotional support. You know, some people, you know, let's face it, a quart of Ben and Jerry's or Haagen-Dazs is of emotional support, or we wouldn't eat it. So dogs have magical powers, and so do other animals. But we all know people have been going absolutely crazy in that. And since people have been ruining it for others, we end up having that problem where nobody is controlling it. There's no controls whatsoever. I don't think it's asking too much for people to be able to have their emotional support dog in their building or on the plane if it makes them feel better and they pet it and they're calmer, because that's why, let's face it, while we get dogs. But the problem is, when your emotional support dog has zero training and is aggressive or is barking or is jumping or is lunging or is coming over to our service dog, or somebody else's dog who is well-behaved, and now all of a sudden, what happens? We have a mess. And why do we have a mess? We have a mess because we have people looking on and authorities who say, we shouldn't allow any dogs here, and it's going to ruin it for everyone. Now, to have basic training and certain standards for emotional support dogs would actually help people, because this way, Let's say we go to the veterinarian, and the veterinarian says, yep, this dog is healthy, he's got a nice temperament. You may be able to turn him into an emotional support dog or even a service dog. 1 out of 100 dogs can be a service dog. About 1 in 10 probably could do a therapy dog work. And probably 1 in 2 can be an emotional support dog. A well-behaved dog is great. I mean, that's fantastic. But the problem is when you bring that dog into places or establishments and claim it as a service dog, you're really not helping. You're hurting. You're hurting people who have put a lot of time and energy. You're hurting people who genuinely need service dogs in their lives. And you're going to ruin it for everyone. And then nobody's going to be able to have any of the dogs anywhere. And that's going to hurt a lot of people. So let's try to be above board here. So that's what we're going to go into now for shelter dog to service dog segment. What kind of qualities are good for you to have and for you to possess in order to create that bond with your either emotional support dog or a dog you want to train to become a service dog? Well, some of the great qualities you want is obviously no aggression. Now, that doesn't mean that the dog can't look at somebody or, you know, if it's alert, it's supposed to be a little low bark or something. But having a dog who's severely dog aggressive or very people aggressive, you're done. Okay. So you want to choose a dog who is going to be calm, confident, not a super friendly dog, but a dog who's kind of just happy to be with you. You want a dog who's not going to be fatal attraction, who's so bonded to you that he can't be separated from you, you know, by an inch. But we also do want a dog who's going to be like a parent, like a mother, who's going to be a little clingy, just a little, so that the dog is able to feel like it's protecting you, and not protecting you in an aggressive way, but protecting you in a mothering, loving way. And that's really what any dog should do for us, right? We want a dog who is going to have qualities of being calm and confident, a dog who's going to feel like he's tied and connected to you, because if he's connected to you or she's connected to you, you'll have a better chance that the dog behaves and is focusing on you instead of focusing on everything else in the airport or in your apartment complex. But let's be honest, okay? It takes a lot of training to get a dog to be well behaved. Some dogs, you know, I've had a bunch of my Ridgebacks. Now, granted, I'm me, but you know, looking at it, I think, you know, some of my dogs didn't have as much training, behavioral work, because I was the breeder. I made sure I bred them right. They're super dogs. But we've even had quite a few rescue dogs, and it just seems like they figure it out very easily. Well, that's because we set rules. We set goals, and we teach the dogs what we expect, so that once the dog understands, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do, then the dog goes on and he's the best dog in the world. But if you don't set some clear boundaries, just like you would want to do with your child, you'd want to set boundaries for your child, because otherwise your child's going to wind up as either a spoiled brat or in jail or in big trouble, getting kicked out of school or having, you know, a lot of different issues. People who end up as a young adult and adults who have issues don't all have horrible parents, but, you know, a lot of them are just kids who were troubled, or same thing with dogs. Sometimes dogs just have troubles. They can have chemical issues. They can be, I don't know about bipolar, but dogs can have OCD. I've seen quite a few, and actually a lot of the herding breeds, when you start breeding herding breed to a different herding breed dog, I see a lot of dogs who have OCD. Things like laser pointers, don't use laser pointers with your dog. You can use it with your cat. Please don't use that with your dogs. It makes the dogs hyper-focus and more OCD. And although it might be very cute and you might think it's adorable and look, watch me have my dog jumping on the wall, what really is happening is you're making your dog phobic and hyperactive and OCD. And then good luck when there's a shadow or the dog sees sunlight on you know, on your TV, and the dog jumps up at your TV and knocks down your $4,000 TV. So there's definitely different things that we have to consider. And also, being fair to our dogs. So first quality we were talking about is a dog who's very mothering, a dog who really wants to be there, wants to be with you, not a dog who's looking constantly at squirrels or ducks or for food on the floor, but rather a dog who seems to be bonded, one that you just feel like, wow, there's something about him. We have a chemistry. And we want to look for that chemistry. That's exactly what we want. And that's a great dog for either a service dog or an emotional support dog. So if you have a dog who's ill-behaved and you feel great having him in your house and he's not going to go bite someone or run down the street and get someone killed, then that's fine. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is those of you who are looking to actually either train your own dog or have someone help you to train or teach your dog how to be well behaved. The difference should be between an emotional support dog and a service dog that the emotional support dog doesn't need to be task trained, and according to the ADA, and also the owner of the emotional support dog doesn't have a qualifying ADA disability. And that's where we get into the difference. But really, behaviorally, for public access exposure, absolutely, the dogs, although both of those dogs should be great, and of course therapy dogs, which are completely different, but all the dogs that are going to be out in the public, whether they're task trained or not, should have wonderfully behaved and very gentle temperaments. So you're looking for a dog, you're looking for a shelter dog. What do I look for when I'm looking to rescue a dog? Well, the first 19 dogs I chose, or my assistant chose specifically, and she's trained with me for 5 years already and is amazing. She and I know what to look for. So we will go to the local shelters, deal with rescue groups, and before we even start training them to do any of the service dog work, we do about 4 to 6 months of just basic canine behavior, which is like we do through United Canine Professionals. And if anyone wants to get help, behavioral help, canine behavior, you can contact 1-855, the number 4, the letter K, the number 9, PROS, P-R-O-S. So 1-855-449-9288. We'll get you that. There are two different numbers. The other one will get you through as well. Or go onto our website, www.united, the letter K, the number 9, PROS, PROS.com, UnitedCaninePROS.com. What that's going to do, and it's better to go onto the website, is you're going to find a lot of different information that's going to help you with working with your dog. I've written several books. I've actually written a book, a series of 13, but that's on something else. That's the My Name is Wyatt book series for kids. But the book Happens, S-H-H-H, Happens, Dog Behavior 101, which is available on Amazon. Great book to help you. There's going to be a new updated issue, updated book, but for right now, that one is pretty terrific, and it's very helpful. Just remember, you want to teach your dog. Don't worry about training your dog. Worry about teaching your dog what you need it to do. So the same as you would teach your kids to say please and thank you, or to hold a door open for someone, or to, you know, obey traffic signals and obey, you know, things that are told in school for the teacher to tell them. It's the same thing. Just teach your dog. Don't train your dog. Why are you worrying about training your dog when it's not the right dog? So when you go into a shelter or a rescue, if you connect with a dog and it's the wrong dog and you say, oh, I love this dog, but I really didn't want a dog who sheds, or I really didn't want a dog who was already 7 years old. Although senior dogs can be wonderful, and please do consider them, maybe not for a service dog, but certainly for an emotional support dog, you can still get a lot of wonderful years out of that dog. Service dog, you want to be able to get about 8 years of usable service life. But hey, if that works for you, it's fine, especially smaller breeds. Some of them live a really long time. So even if you got a six-year-old dog, it's very likely the dog could help you for the next 6 or 7 years. And that's a long time. Those birds will all be in 6 or 7 years. Now, the next quality we're going to look for is a dog that's physically sound. Now, why does that matter? All right. Well, if you're going to be looking for a dog to help you with mobility, for lift assist, to help you get up and down, you need to have a dog who's going to be very, very solidly built and almost should look like a show dog. People say, oh, I don't need a show dog. Well, but you want a dog who looks like a show dog. Now, that doesn't mean it's a purebred. It means that it stands correctly, that the conformation is very good, that it stands in a rectangular shape, not all over the place. It doesn't have a big dip in its back. It doesn't have arthritis already. Again, emotional support dog, you have a lot less you have to worry about because they're not task trained and they're not going into restaurants and other public places like that. But you, if you're going to be putting time and effort into having an emotional support dog or certainly for a service dog, you really do want to have a dog who's going to be very, very safe and sound physically and mentally. So a dog, another thing is a dog whose coat is easy to care for. Now, if you love your really, really, really long-haired dogs, that's totally fine. But if you are looking for a dog who's going to be pretty easy, something like maybe a dog who's got a shorter coat, that might be a better idea for a lot of people because the shorter coat is going to be easier for you to maintain. So if you have a disability perhaps, or you don't have an excessive amount of money, which I don't know too many people these days who do have a lot of extra money laying around. But the idea being that if the dog that you're choosing is going to be a dog who might be able to be easily cared for, that might be a good idea. Because let's say you're going to get something like a poodle mix or something. Those dogs require constant grooming. Even, you know, like something that has a long coat, like a Maltese or a Shih Tzu, can be a great dog. But let's think about it. How much money do you have disposable income that you can go get your dog groomed every week or month or whatever? And if you're not physically able to, and if you don't have a lot of time, consider a dog with a short coat that is easy to groom, that's easy to shed, that can be kept clean. Because especially for a service dog, we want a dog that's going to be not that much work. Don't want a dog who's going to be constantly, constantly a lot of work. And if we do that, and we do end up having, you know, that dog that requires just too much work, you know, who knows? You know, you may wind up not being able to use that dog because it's just got too much care and time that's required. So we want to actually, anytime we're in a physical location where there are can be items of food or anything like that, it's much easier to have a shorter coated dog. Or if you have a longer coated dog, make sure you're bathing and cleaning the dog properly. Brush the dog the morning you go out so that it's not shedding clumps of hair all over that are getting into people's food. There are health code violations, by the way. I did want to mention, if you go in and you fake, because you're going in and you're faking a service dog in a restaurant, if the health department will see that and your dog is not actually a service dog, but you're just faking it, actually the restaurant can be in violation of health codes because dogs are not allowed, animals are not allowed near food preparation areas. But if it's a service dog, then the ADA kicks in. So again, thinking about the coat and the type of hair that the dog has can be a big help. If the dog has a shorter coat, or if the dog has, like some of the poodle mixes, where they're kind of a curly coat and the hair doesn't really shed too much, then that's also a good choice. Fourth thing is try to rescue, okay? If you're looking for a mixed breed designer dog, instead of going and getting a puppy, consider having one of the rescues, and there are tons of rescues that specialize in every purebred and every mix of mixed breed dogs, you'll see. There's actually rescues for the poodle mixes, for the lab pit poodle mixes, for golden poodle mixes, for cocker spaniel poodle mixes, for everything. So if you can go and contact them and tell them, hey, I'm looking to have a low shedding dog, what do you have? You might have to wait a little, but instead of spending thousands of dollars and supporting a puppy mill or people who are breeding just for money, you're going to be rescuing a dog and you're still going to get the same qualities. Now that brings me to the next point. Why would we rescue a puppy when we could kind of know what the temperament was going to be like as an adult? Now, there are different schools of thought. I'm going to stick to mine on this one. I married my husband, who was the most amazing person I'd ever met. He started the DARE program nationally, started more than 200 canine units, or assisted in founding more than 200 canine units up and down the East Coast. He was in a Stallone movie. He was actually in a couple of movies. And as a choreographer, because he was actually working with Sylvester Stallone in a couple of these movies where you'll see police dogs. Well, he was the one who explained and kind of choreographed where everybody went and how the dogs would be and the handlers and training, you know, the actors to become, you know, narcotics handlers or patrol handlers. So, you know, he knew a lot. And I, of course, have been a canine behaviorist for longer than I'd like to admit, many, many, many decades. So what happens when you get a puppy? Why did I mention about my husband? Well, I met my husband when I was in my 20s, my probably mid-20s. So I didn't meet him when he was a baby and I was a baby. I met him when he was an adult, and I assessed and evaluated the qualities he had as an adult. What was his temperament? What did he look like size-wise and health-wise? And, you know, what color eyes did I want or whatever? And those sound silly, but with a dog, it really matters. So if you get a puppy and let's say you buy a poodle puppy, not a standard poodle, but just like some mix of a poodle. So you buy this puppy, and it's supposed to be a mini of whatever that means, which is bad because now you're talking about single trait breeding, which is where most of the health and temperament issues and longevity issues pop up, because you're breeding only for the size of the dog instead of breeding for the other qualities of health and temperament and longevity. And that's where you get into trouble. So would you rather, when you were a baby, be fixed up with your sibling and say, okay, you're going to both grow up in your house? So not that it has to be your you know, biological sibling, but let's say your parents and your parents' best friends decided that you're going to marry their son or their daughter. And now what happens, all of a sudden, you're in a house with this other person and you're growing up from the time your baby's together. Now, what are the odds that you guys are going to grow up and really like each other? Probably not as high as the fact that you might go out as an adult and meet someone who fits you just perfectly. Growing up in the same house as someone else, meaning a puppy growing up in a house with you as its parent, well, you're not a service dog trainer. How do you know what to look for? I mean, there are very, very few service dog trainers who really know what they're doing. There are a lot of good people out there, but we have to think about making sure that the people who are getting these dogs and training these dogs have expertise, and this includes you. You have to have expertise in choosing the dog and in understanding the disability. So it's not a bad idea, actually, to reach out to us at Merlin's Kids, MerlinsKids.org, because we are a nonprofit, MerlinsKids.org. And you can look on our website and see some of the qualities and see what we do and some of the training protocol that we use and how long it takes. You know, we've got to imagine that when you're training a dog or you're teaching a dog, somebody's got to know what they're doing. You can't just all, like with a puppy, you know, kind of wing it. And that's what happens where people go and get a puppy from a quote-unquote breeder, and it's, you know, mix of a mix, And they say, oh my gosh, I bought a mini golden doodle and it's 120 pounds. I actually have a client who has, she got a golden poodle mix, and she said, and it had a lot of health issues and a lot of temperament issues. And for whatever reason, she got another one. She wanted another dog. She got it from the same person, same breeder. She said, no, I don't want a standard. I want a mini. So she got the mini. The standard, I think, was 90 pounds. So she said, oh, that's too big. I'm going to get a mini. The mini is 120 pounds. So the problem is that genetics don't always combine where we want them to combine. So she's stuck with an older dog who actually got cancer at, I think, 5 or 6. I think it was 5 years old. She gets another one that's 120 pounds, and she wanted basically a 30 to 40 pound dog. So that's the problem with genetics on that. Genetics doesn't do what we want it to do. Genetics does what genetics does because it's genetics. So when you're looking for a dog and you're choosing a dog who's already a year or two old, you know how big the dog's going to be. You know what it's going to look like. You know if it's sound or not because you can evaluate it. You know its basic temperament. And then you should spend 4 to 6 months after getting the dog where you're just working on making it behaviorally sound. Don't worry about task training it yet. Most dogs can be taught to do a lot of things. Now, if you're looking for a dog for mobility assist, for mobility support dog, and you're going to be leaning on it, it's way better to have a dog who's already an adult, right? Because now you can check them out. People say, oh, well, you know, I want to raise the puppy so I know nobody messed it up before me. But wait a minute, who are you? You're one of the 3.5 million people who dumps their dog every year because you bought a puppy and you didn't know what you were doing. I mean, I don't know one single adult who doesn't blame their parents for raising them wrong. So guess what? You're raising your puppy wrong. And the fact that you can evaluate another dog and as an adult is a super benefit because, first of all, you're saving a life. And second of all, and again, I understand if you're training a dog for autism or for an emotional issue, I love my Ridgebacks for that. There are a lot of really good breeds, purebred dogs who are wonderful for that. But if you're not going to buy a purebred, you know, show dog, like Grand Champion Show Dog line dog, then please just rescue because you'll save a lot of money, you'll save a life, and you have a way better chance than you're going to have buying a designer puppy from, you know, a pet store or even from a person calling himself a breeder. You want to make sure that that person, if you do buy a dog, even a mixed breed dog from a breeder, make sure you know that, that there's a contract that if there anything happens, a minimum of 2 years after you purchase that puppy, that a minimum of 2 years after that they will pay for or compensate you and not just say, oh, yeah, bring the dog back after you fall in love with it for 2 years. Make sure you've got some kind of a health and temperament guarantee. I've seen people and actually I'm a canine behaviorist, as we all know. And one of the things, there was a wonderful German Shepherd breeder who had bred to a dog, a German Shepherd, who had the weak nerve syndrome. So one of her puppies grew up, it was about 8 or 10 months old. She actually saw me when I was testifying in court on another case to help a family who had been accused of their dog had been accused of biting someone, and it turned out to be a farce. And I proved it in court. But, you know, it was crazy because the way this German Shepherd was, the dog had definitely chemical issues, and they came that was this weak nerve syndrome. The German Shepherd breeder was super reputable, lovely woman, not too far from me in New Jersey here. And she paid me to go to work with every single dog, to evaluate every single dog in that litter, every puppy, to make sure that there were no others that had that problem. That's standing behind your dogs. Try that on a full mix breeder who's going to say, oh, well, we don't care because they'll take your puppy back and sell it to somebody else. That's what's sad. So try to rescue. Rescuing is a great way to go. If you really want a purebred dog, then get a purebred dog. You know, standard poodles are pretty cool dogs. We have about 5 of them in our program. And we also have a little guy named Chip, who's a Cavalier poodle mix. The only reason I wanted to have Chip, because I love Cavalier King Charles Spaniels. They're wonderful temperaments typically, but they do have a lot of eye and heart issues. and even cancers and different things, sometimes seizures. So the poodle seems to help with that and gives them a nicer temperament and a little bit more steady health. And they're just, you know, he's adorable little guy, so we love him. But whatever the dog is, who cares? You know, there's all these DNA tests and everything. The goal is to find the right dog, to spend 4 to 6 months after you get the dog, before you start falling crazy in love with it, although that's going to obviously happen quickly, especially if you're like me. But you want to make sure before you start sinking thousands of dollars into training a dog that the dog is going to be able to have at least the temperament and the ability to, to basically be a good dog and be able to do those things and not be reactive. So it's usually a lot easier. Think back to grammar school, the kids you went to school with, all right? And we all got stuck together in a class, right? You probably aren't friends with too many of those kids now because one grew up to be a drug dealer, one grew up to be a drug addict, one grew up to be president of a big company, another one grew up to be, you know, the guy who was the engineer of the train, another guy's a big financial planner, another guy runs a bakery, you know? So imagine if you had to be with that person and that's where you were going to end up, would you want that? So that's why I say it's a lot easier to evaluate a temperament for you as amateurs to be able to get a good dog by taking somebody who knows dogs with you. It doesn't have to be a trainer, and sometimes it's better to have a friend who's just great with dogs just kind of go with you, see how the dog is with that person. And there are different ways of temperament testing the dog, so you'll be able to do a pretty good job. Now, the other thing that I think is very helpful in our For the Love a Dog segment is continuing on the things we want to look for a dog. You can actually go on to our website, Wyatt's List, WYATTSLIST.com. Wyattslist.com. There's a free portion and then there's a paid portion, but it's very inexpensive and we donate a ton to charity, and that's where most of the money goes to. Now, for Wyattslist.com, you'll see how to get with a groomer, how to choose and how to ask questions of your dog trainer, how to ask and how to get information from a doggy daycare or for your pet sitter or your dog walker. Because let's face it, anybody can go make a profile on social media and say they're, you know, God's gift to dog training, and they don't even know what they're doing. And they can say anything they want. You'll never know. That's why I tell people, don't take people on face value. Always assume, you know, think with best intentions that the person is maybe telling the truth. You know, like Ronald Reagan always says, trust but verify. I love that. It's the best. Trust but verify. Okay, I trust you that you're doing this. Well, you'll go through a list of 20 or 30 questions with this dog trainer, this pet sitter, this doggy daycare. And if you get to the end of it and they haven't answered every question on there and can't answer it, you need to go somewhere else. Because someone who wants your business, and especially a dog trainer, since there's like umpteen thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dog trainers, there is a lot of options for you. And if you need a behaviorist like me and like my team, you can go on to UnitedK9Pros.com. We'll help you out. But go on to Wyattslist.com. And what you're going to see is lists and tons of information from great people like my good friend Temple Grandin, the top veterinary oncologist in the country, the president of the AVMA Ethics Board, former president, former committee chair, people like that who really are experts of experts. And rather than going on Google and coming up upon advice that's on some blog that's written by a 16-year-old who works at a pet box store and doesn't really know a lot, you don't know, and here you are relying on that information. So if you go on to Wyattslist.com, that's Wyatt's List. I don't name things after myself. I name things after my animals. Wyatt is the best dog in the world. He's my service dog. He won the AKC Ace Award. Everybody knows who Wyatt is. He's pretty much legendary. So I named him for Wyatt's List because I was actually in a pretty bad car accident when I was at Golden Globes with my friend Temple years ago when her movie came out. And I got hit by another vehicle who was actually fleeing for a homicide, a guy who had, I believe, had punched his girlfriend, and she was holding the baby, and the baby fell, and the baby died, so it turned into this whole mess. And of course, we were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. This guy comes flying across, hits my rental vehicle, pushes me into the side of the road, and hits another woman, pushes her into the side of the road. And thank God I was okay. The woman was okay. Her daughter was okay. Wyatt went flying, though, even seatbelted and all, with had him clipped to the seatbelt. He still flew from one side to the other and flew forward. And he was seemed to be okay, but it was a pretty big impact. Well, this is where Wyatt's List concept was born, because I was out in Beverly Hills, California, late at night, you know, after the Golden Globes. And how do you find a vet? How do you find? And this is before we had the internet being so good with being able to find places with maps and Google Maps and everything. But the goal was, for me, I just wanted to find a 24-hour vet hospital. So I wanted to know the questions to ask. I wanted to know what could happen. What should I be doing in an emergency? So that's why we have people who are emergency rescue people who are just wonderful. And that's why I want everybody to be able to have that help for Wyatt's List. And you can go online, you can sign up, and you'll be able to find a lot of really amazing information. There's over 1,000 pages uploaded into that website, and experts of the experts of the experts, not somebody you don't know, who isn't doing this professionally, who doesn't know what they're doing. You will actually have experts who not only know what they're doing, but are the top in their field. It's really important for me to give you that advice to, you know, ask for help. It's okay. There are a lot of people who, you know, offer help and then want it, want it returned. I'm not looking to get anything in return. I just want you to be able to have a good dog who's going to go do the job you're looking for him to do. And I want you to get a dog that isn't going to limit you. There was a woman several years ago who called me up and said, "Hey, Janice, I know what you do with the service dogs. And, you know, you're so amazing. And I've seen your dogs and they're like mechanical, but they have personalities. How do you do that?" So, well, you know, I choose the right dogs. I choose the right people to work with them. And then I choose the right recipient, because I can do two out of the three and not have it work out. So the recipient is important. And I'm an expert on many, many health and you know, physical and emotional issues that I studied about. And that's why I know what kind of dog is going to work well. But I have to know about the disability. So that's one of the things I think you need to look at. You don't want a dog who's a little bit nervous and edgy if you want an emotional support dog or a psychiatric support dog or a service dog, because you need to have a dog who's not going to have the same qualities you have. You want a dog who's going to be steady when you're nervous, not one that's going to be more nervous. So this woman had called me up. She lived in Phoenix, Arizona. Her friend had gotten her a motorcycle sidecar. She was very limited in her hearing. She was not deaf, but I think she was legally deaf, but she could hear certain things. So she bought for $22,000 or $24,000, was well over $20,000. She bought from some local agency a service dog for hearing. Well, it was Golden Retriever, really cute. I mean, not well-bred, certainly. It didn't have great conformation, and it was very small. Not quite sure what it was trained to do, but it was terrified of loud noises. So you say, well, that's good. A dog who's terrified of loud noises and barks, right? That would be great because it'll bark and alert the lady, right? No, this dog didn't even bark to alert. Guess what this dog did? This dog actually took off and ran because it was so terrified. Dragged this poor woman, this deaf woman, almost deaf woman, across the street in the center of Phoenix and almost got her killed. Dragged her right across the street because it was so terrified. And this woman called me. This is obviously well after the incident, and it wasn't only once. She said, you know, we communicated versus on the TTY, which is the system that we can speak with an operator, and the operator can then translate and speak to the person, and then to the other person who's the hearing person. And we discussed it, and she said, well, I want you to retrain my dog. And I said, I can't, I'm not going to take a dog who's that fearful and turn it into a dog. And I said, you know, is there a way that you can, you know, maybe just get another dog? And she said, I can't leave the dog home because it barks and I get neighbors who complain about the barking. And I can't take the dog with me because if I take the dog with me, the dog is terrified and drags me all over the place. I said, well, can you, I obviously don't want to return the dog. You've had the dog for a while now. She said, no, but whereas I wanted to have a dog that was going to give me freedom, now I have a ball and chain. She said, I love my dog, but the dog is terrified of everything. So that's why I want you to retrain it. Guess what? The dog doesn't belong being even called a service dog. Dog isn't aggressive or anything, but it's not the right dog. So, you know, you have this poor woman who her friend bought her a sidecar. It was, I don't know, $10,000, some crazy amount, so that she could go and be on the motorcycle with her dog and with her friend. And I thought that was one of the most wonderful things I'd ever heard a friend do for another friend. But it ended up where, you know, the dog was limiting the woman, and this poor woman couldn't go anywhere because the dog was so ill-behaved, even to the point where it couldn't even be left alone because it was so phobic and terrified. So that's where we need to have standards. I'm working on that. Trust me, I'm working on those standards. We're not that far off, but we will have them, and I will see to that. You know, the key, I think, really is for everybody to just stop scamming each other. Come on, people, let's do the right thing. It's not that hard to do the right thing. You know, give money to people who need it. Help people. Don't rip people off. If you're a dog trainer and you're the best dog trainer in the world, good for you. I'm happy. And go help somebody for free. Go do the right thing, you know. And I'm not saying that you're not, but, you know, just in general. And if you're a person who doesn't have an expertise in a certain area, just admit it. Like, you don't go to your dentist and say, hey, can you give me braces and also fill my teeth and then do some periodontal work? There are experts in who specialize. So I'm a behaviorist. I specialize in behavior. I specialize in fear and fear aggression. I can handle all of that. I can handle, you know, dominant aggressive. I don't particularly care what I'm doing as long as I'm helping the dog. But when I get a dog who's afraid, who's been maybe somebody used a shock collar, an e-collar improperly, which happens a lot, not somebody who actually knows what to do, but somebody who didn't know what they didn't know. And then I get this fearful dog who's so reactive because it thinks that every time you go near it, it's somebody's going to zap it because they don't realize a lot of times, and this is so, so important, dogs will typically think that if they're looking at somebody and they feel pain, they'll think that the pain is coming from that person is making that pain. Versus us, we'll say, oh, I have a backache and happen to be looking at my friend. I know my friend didn't kill me and beat me in the back to make the pain. I know the pain is from something else, but we're humans and we think differently. Dogs think like dogs because they're dogs. So this is where looking for the right dog or working with your dog, make sure you find a good trainer. That's why I said to go on to Wyatt's List, because you can go on to Wyatt's List and it's going to have lists of questions for you to ask. It's going to have information for you so that you're going to be able to actually go and ask the right questions. Even for veterinarians, it's important if you know you're the consumer and whether you're purchasing services or an item, check it out. It's your hard-earned money. Make sure that you're not entrusting your dog or your kids to somebody who doesn't know what they're doing. And don't send your dog away to doggy boot camp without knowing really well what methods they're using, because a lot of these doggy boot camps are using techniques and aversives that you are not going to want your dog to have, but you're not going to know. And yeah, maybe your dog will come back in 2 weeks. Can you imagine reforming somebody in 2 weeks? How do you do that? I mean, come on. So it's something that I think everybody owes their pets to make sure that when you do hand that pet off, you do give that dog to somebody else for whatever reason to work with, that you know you're actually taking care of it, making sure that the dog is going to somebody who's going to love it and care for it. So I want everybody out there. So the couple of websites I mentioned, UnitedK9Pros.com, MerlinsKids.org, and Wyattslist.com are going to help you. And if you need help, please do reach out to us. Please listen every week to our show. And we wish you a happy, healthy, wonderful weekend with no rain. Have a great weekend.